Today's off-season Survivor podcast is sponsored in part by LegalZoom. There's lots of great reasons that smart business people trust LegalZoom. For starters, if you want to incorporate, form an LLC, a nonprofit, file a patent or trademark, get a DBA, more, LegalZoom provides the help that you need. Not everybody has a lawyer like Andrew Savage at their disposal for bouncing these legal questions off. That's why LegalZoom is there to help. Over the past decade, more than a million business owners just like you have started with LegalZoom. LegalZoom's your first stop when you need advice from an attorney. Now remember, LegalZoom is not a law firm. They're not even a PG law firm. So they built a network of independent attorneys in most states to provide legal advice and other useful services to help you run your business. So whether you need a contract reviewed or advice on whether you should incorporate, form an LLC, whatever your legal questions, start with LegalZoom. They provide complete transparency with upfront pricing, customer reviews, and 100% satisfaction guarantee. So make the smart choice for your business at LegalZoom.com today. Don't forget to enter Rob at checkout to save even more. Again, that's Rob at checkout for more savings. LegalZoom, legal help is here. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cisternew here with another Survivor off-season podcast, and I'm excited about this one because I think that we've got a good one for you today, because our great friend who normally studies international things when we're talking about The Amazing Race all year long has actually gone and done a lot of research on international Survivor to do this special off-season podcast. So let's welcome back in, for the first time since we talked about the Game of Thrones Amazing Race, here is the host of the Amazing Race Canada wrap-up show, the great Jessica Leese. Jessica, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. I'm great. And, you know, if I didn't alienate the audience with Amazing Race of Thrones, I think we're going to do it today.
Well, this was your idea.
Yes, it was.
Going through all of the international seasons of Survivor and coming on to talk about them. And this is something I've always been curious about, because we hear about different countries having Survivor seasons. What made you think that this would be a good thought for a podcast?
This is something that I'm always very curious about. And it started out when I started looking into the twists that they use in different international iterations of The Amazing Race. And along those lines, I find out that there are 13 different international versions of The Amazing Race to date. There are 48 different versions of International Survivor.
Wow.
So I had to imagine that there are going to be some really interesting little quirks and twists, some of which may be applicable to American seasons in the future, which is something that we'll talk a little bit more about. But the more I read, like, the more twists, and I think I discovered by accident that some of these seasons, where U.S. season is always 39 days, some of these international seasons will go for like 100 days. And that was what got me really into reading up on these and trying to watch some of them, which some are easier to track down than others. But it really, I started writing down my favorite twists, and I realized this is something along the lines of the Survivor Think Tank. I think we can probably glean a couple of ideas, and who knows, a couple of these twists might show up on a future season of U.S. Survivor.
Now, with 48 different versions of International Survivor, I would imagine that there are some countries where the life lived on Survivor is not that different from everyday life in those countries, right?
I would guess so. I think it depends a lot on, I think some places make it more difficult, some places make it a lot less difficult. Like, a couple of these seasons looked like they were filmed in an adventure park.
Ooh.
So it's like, yeah, you go camp on the beach, and then your reward, you can go zipline over there.
You know? Wow, ziplining here or there.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Amazing. So I'm very excited to get into all of this here with Jessica. By the way, Jess, how is the Amazing Race Canada season going?
Well, Dan Heaton and I are having a lot of fun breaking it down. We're recording some really great podcasts. And, you know, the season itself, it is definitely the Return of the Jedi or the Godfather Part 3 of Amazing Race seasons in Canada, but there's still a lot to be enjoyed, and there are a couple of teams that are absolute delights.
Okay.
So we're having fun.
All right, and Jess, I know you recently visited Iceland this summer. Did you catch any international Survivor on your trip there?
Iceland does not have its own version of Survivor, I am sad to report.
Why not?
I think maybe it's one of those cases where the day-to-day life, if you don't live in the city, the day-to-day life is going to be very much like Survivor already.
Okay. All right. So, Jess, how are we going to go through this journey around the world of Survivor?
Well, for starters, I'm going to give you a little bit of a history lesson. Probably a lot of stuff you already know, Rob, but I'm not sure that the listeners do. And then I'm going to, after the history lesson, we're going to talk about some twists. We'll do this a little bit Survivor Think Tank style, where I'll float some twists to you and you tell me whether you think they could work or not. And then we're going to go into a section that I like to call weird twists that would never work in the States because they sound like a bunch of people from the previously on Survivor forum got really, really high and just started writing stuff down.
You got it. Okay. Sounds perfect.
Yes. So to start out, a little bit of background on Survivor. Now, Rob, I'm sure you're aware that U.S. Survivor was not the first Survivor.
Right.
It was actually, the show was conceptualized by this British TV producer named Charlie Parsons, and he started trying to pitch it in 1994. Right. You and I were high school students at the time.
Yes.
If you can think back that far. And he finally sold it to someone in 1997, and it aired in Sweden first. And Mark Burnett licensed the idea in 1999, and that was how we got U.S. Survivor. But over the years, U.S. Survivor in particular was so wildly successful that a lot of other countries just started churning out their own versions of the show.
Now, let me ask you a question, Justin. Now, are all the 48 versions of Survivor from the same sort of family tree, either licensed out as Expedition Robinson or Survivor, or do countries, like some country decides, hey, Survivor's really popular, let's just make up our own Survivor that's sort of like a no-frills version of the same thing, but not franchising it out?
I think almost all of these are franchised out. I know that in China, where copyright laws do not matter, they have kind of, they did use the name Survivor on a show that really had nothing to do with actual Survivor. I mean, they did kind of the same thing with Amazing Race, but in, I was reading up on it, and you go down the list on Wikipedia that lists all the seasons out, and it's like the Survivor China, like winners, everyone who played the game. It was one of these cooperative effort things, but
they all got the participation trophy on Survivor China.
Yeah, they called it like Shangri-La or something along those lines. And then everyone at the end, like nobody got voted out. They didn't really have challenges. So I don't really know what its tie-in
with Survivor
was. Well,
that's very communist.
It was more like Utopia than Survivor, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So by and large, these Survivor seasons are offshoots of the original Expedition Robinson. And most of them kind of flopped, like they would run for two or three seasons and then they'd be done. But in a few countries, it's been pretty successful. And those versions have spawned like many, many iterations, particularly in France, Italy, Denmark, Belgium, Norway, Spain, Sweden, and Turkey seem to be the ones that have really popular Survivor seasons.
Is there any common denominator between the seasons in the countries that have worked versus the countries where it didn't work?
It doesn't seem like it. Some of it, like regionally speaking, like I think the French version is overall pretty well done. And they tend to, they took a year off for reasons that I think you probably know about, and we'll get into that. But it seems like it's pretty well produced and they actually kind of care about what happens to the people. And I think also the casting has been really great in some of these seasons. And particularly in Denmark, they are not unwilling to mess with the formula in huge ways.
Okay.
I think that kind of is a good hallmark of a successful franchise of Survivor is, are you willing to take some big risks? And we're going to talk about what some of those big risks are.
Are you willing to risk it to get the biscuit?
Exactly.
They say in Denmark.
Yeah.
That's what the creator of the show in Denmark, it's actually, I'm reading on Wikipedia, it's Denmark Burnett is actually the executive producer of Survivor in Denmark.
We're 10 minutes into this podcast and you already came up with the hashtag. So a couple of pieces of trivia for you. You have probably heard about this, but, you know, with 48 different international versions and like hundreds of seasons and thousands of people that have competed on the show, it's probably worth mentioning that in the entire history of the show's filming, we've only had two people actually die during filming.
Now, are you counting the person that died in France before?
Yes. Okay. It was like the very first day of filming, this guy died. and they ended up canceling that whole season.
Okay.
But in Bulgaria, and this is something like the hardcore fans already know this, but there was a contestant that died about a week and a half into the game. And not only did they continue filming, they made this an active storyline on the show.
Well, how could you not if you're going to keep going?
Yeah, it's very weird to go into the Wikipedia page for this and like look at the list of contestants. And then it's like voted out day 5, voted out day 9, died day 15.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wow. little it's
how
a little
long
chilling.
Ago was that? Was it recent?
It was several years ago.
Yeah. Did they really like steer into it in terms of like this season in Survivor Bulgaria? It's so intense. Somebody died. Or did they treat it like with reverence?
They treated it with reverence.
Okay.
I have not seen the whole season in question, but I've seen clips. Like you can find clips of the season on YouTube, and they do kind of like the host comes out with some gravitas and he tells the people, well, this guy's not coming back and here's why. And everybody just kind of breaks down, and a couple of people left the game afterwards because they thought, you know, somebody dies on this, I don't want any part of it. And
right.
it's still, but they continued filming the season, and I think they did like a little montage, like they memorialized him pretty heavily.
Yeah.
So I don't think they would ever do that in the US if that happened. Like they just canceled the show,
yeah,
if not the series, but
yeah. Just tell me, in terms of how the person died, was it an accident or was it something where the person got sick?
It was a heart attack.
Yeah.
He was 53.
And did it happen on camera, or this was just something where like that happened back at camp and you just never saw it?
I think it was during a challenge.
Oh, wow.
If I remember right.
Yeah.
Or he just finished the challenge. It was kind of a Russell Swan situation with a much less happy outcome.
Yeah.
So it was something they definitely, I don't think they showed the actual moment of death on camera, but I think they had enough of it on film. Like they brought in doctors to try to save him, and it ended up the next thing they show is the host telling the rest of the contestants that he's not coming back to the game.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't believe they let Russell Swan play a second time after what happened in the first time. We talked about that in the Evolution to Strategy Philippines chapter, which is coming up this week, that I really was very surprised that after Russell Swan, that Jeff talks about how it was the closest they ever had to somebody dying on the show, that they brought him back and let him play again. I don't know if they would maybe let that happen after some what happened in France. And now I think that they screen these people even harder before the start of the season. I'm not sure if Russell Swan would get a second chance or a first chance.
Probably not. And as I recall, the guy that died in France was in very good health. And
yeah.
There was just like one thing that they didn't check for. And it was kind of a fluke thing. And the poor doctor who let that go past ended up committing suicide.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is a very dark story.
We're getting very dark here, but I didn't mean to go down this dark path, but it's interesting background, I think. And Survivor Bulgaria never really recovered, but Survivor France is coming back.
Okay.
So there's that.
So wait, which doctor killed himself, in France or Bulgaria?
In France.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
In fairness to Survivor, though, there are people who are seemingly perfectly healthy and then participate in lots of different athletics and have heart attacks and stuff like that. Like, you know, people like participate in a marathon and they're, you know, perfectly healthy and then they end up having heart attacks. So, I mean, these things do happen. It doesn't necessarily mean that there was negligence.
Right. Like I have participated in this bike ride, this like 40-mile bike ride that happens every year in New York. And they have like 45,000 participants every year, and every year someone dies on it.
Wow.
And I'm not an elite athlete.
And you still do it?
Yes. I don't do it anymore because it's gotten too crazy crowded, but it had nothing to do with people dying on it.
Okay. All right. So Jess, let's get into talking about the nuts and bolts of some of these international versions of Survivor. If we haven't bummed too many people out.
All right. Let's go on a happier note.
Bummer.
They've really messed with the formula in some really interesting ways on a lot of these seasons, and a lot of twists that you have seen on American versions of the show have come from other countries. Like they just kind of rip them off wholesale, and it's interesting because you can go to these international versions and see what works and what doesn't and kind of base your American course design on that. So
in how many different countries is the Medallion of Power flourishing?
You know, they've had things that are similar to the Medallion of Power, but I don't think that thing worked anywhere. But yeah. Here are some that did work in other countries that we have definitely seen happen in the U.S. In fact, one that is very near and dear to your heart, a full year before you went on Survivor Amazon, three different countries divided all their tribes along gender lines.
Oh, wow.
And the interesting thing about that was that they were part of a group of five international seasons that were all filming simultaneously in the same place that kind of shared some resources and film crew, and it saved them a lot of money.
Oh, wow. So there's like some sort of like Survivor co-op where you have like six different countries film Survivor in the same location and just reuse the same challenges?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Netherlands, Denmark, and Sweden all did the gender divisions in 2002. And then those three, along with the Baltics and Norway, were all filming at the same time. And a lot of locations that the U.S. has used have been used by other countries pretty extensively, like Borneo, Pearl Islands gets used all the time. Some locations in the Philippines. And interestingly enough, in 2012 in France, they shot a season of non-winner second-time players at Koh Rong, Cambodia.
So I like this, that there's like some countries that just have like this sort of like Survivor condominium set up where basically you just like rent a beach and then you reuse all the same challenge locations and tribal council.
Yeah, I think it's very economical. I'm surprised they don't do it more often.
Yeah, this is a great investment.
Yeah.
Survivor Brooklyn should look into this.
Survivor Brooklyn, you know, they're on quite a budget. I think they could make their dollar stretch much further if they cooperated with a couple other seasons. But who knows? Like, maybe they should talk to Survivor Queens and see if they can maybe do a little sharing there.
Yeah, if all the different boroughs can go ahead and just have, like, one location, like, in Central Park or somewhere else, maybe you end up going, like, to the Catskills or something, and yeah, then all five of these different seasons film in one place.
I've always been advocating for Survivor North Brother Island.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, Redemption Island is something that has been around forever. It's been around since 2001, where it began in Denmark.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been called a lot of different things, but the basic idea is Redemption Islands, which I thought was very interesting.
Denmark Burnett loves Redemption Island.
It's true. He's a huge fan.
I love it.
Was that Denmark Burnett or was that Samuel Tarly?
That's what Denmark Burnett sounds like.
Oh, he does. Okay.
Yeah.
So they divided tribes along age lines in 2005 on the Belgium/Netherlands season. They've done haves and have-nots in Sweden. They've done fans and favorites, started in Sweden in 2003. And in the Philippines, they actually did something. We're going to talk more about this in detail because I think it's really, really interesting. But they did sort of a blood versus water season in 2011.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, U.S. Survivor does look to these other countries and they've found some twists that they have picked up and used, some to really great effect and some to less good effect.
Okay.
So in that spirit, I have kind of a list of some twists that I've been reading up on and in a lot of cases seen wherever I could. I tried to watch a little bit of these seasons so that I could at least talk with a little bit of authority.
And where do you watch them? They're on YouTube?
Yeah, mostly YouTube. I've looked a little bit on BitTorrent. Most of the stuff's pretty hard to find, but there are some entire seasons of international seasons of Survivor. If you look hard enough, you can find them on YouTube.
And I'm sure if you are looking for them, I think that people will probably send you a ton of links after this podcast.
Right. There's one season in particular, and we're going to talk about this in some extensive detail because it's so freaking weird. But if somebody has a link to this particular season, please send it to me because I have to see how it plays out.
Okay. All right, Jess. Fire away.
All right. Twists that could totally work in the States. We've got a couple of really interesting spins on fans versus favorites that I think would make that really tired concept that has never really worked in the U.S. I think this could make it a lot more interesting.
Well, I think if you say it never really worked in the United States, I think that people would argue that the original fans versus favorites is potentially the best Survivor season of all time.
I wouldn't even put it in my top 10, but I do agree. It was entertaining and we had some great moments that came from it. But the way that they repeated it kind of with no twists and with a bunch of randos that were total cannon fodder, I think if you're not going to have actual fans, you need to do something a little bit different.
Okay.
So here's a new spin on fans versus favorites. And this happened in Survivor Turkey. The favorites turn out to not be survivors coming back, but actual C-list celebrities.
Okay.
And so one team is all people that are fans of the show, and one team is all C-list celebrities.
Good.
So this would be like if, you know, we got a bunch of randos for one side, and the other side was like, I would say even celebrities on the order of the celebrities that we've had before. Like we have your Uncle Cliffies and your Jimmy Johnsons, your Crystal Cox. You could even put the Twinnies on a season like this.
Yeah.
And put them on the favorites tribe. And I think you have some kind of name recognition there. You potentially have somebody that's both a fan of Survivor and a fan of one of these people.
Yeah.
And I think this makes it a lot more interesting than just having people coming back for the second time and steamrolling over the people that have never played before.
No, I like this a lot. I think that Josh and I had actually even stumbled onto this during Evolution of Strategy of an idea like this, where you could even do it like in a three-tribe format, where let's say you can't get 10 C-list celebrities or D-list celebrities to come out. But what if you did like a three-tribe thing where you have one tribe that's the celebrities, one tribe, I think we were talking about some like returning athletes or like famous people who've already played once, like a Jeff Kent and Cliff Robinson, like Lisa Welchel type tribe. And then the other tribe is either returning all stars or if you wanted to make it new players. But I think with the three tribe format, it makes it a little easier to fill these buckets because you only need six of any one given thing as opposed to 10 of any given thing.
Yeah, I think we've talked a lot about how the three tribe format, I think it makes a lot easier to cast and a lot easier to do these kind of weird gimmicky seasons.
I agree. So how did the season play out? Which country did this?
Survivor Turkey did this.
Survivor Turkey. Okay. So how did Survivor Turkey this play out?
It was entertaining. I'm going to pull up the particulars of this so that I can speak to it a little bit more eloquently.
Good. And this answers a question that I've been thinking about for a long time of how do we get Spencer Pratt on Survivor?
Well, Spencer Pratt did I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Yeah, so I think that this would be perfect for him to get in to do it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. We have so much to talk about.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up.
Spice and Hour would be killing it during those weeks.
Yeah. Okay, so it looks like, and I actually,
although maybe he'd not be allowed to do it, like how Steven's not supposed to be on Survivor Know It All this season.
Yeah, maybe not.
Fill in Spice and Hour host.
Well, I guess you could probably have him on there, like doing his own thing, but honestly,
talk about Survivor.
Yeah, I don't think you could trust him not to talk about Survivor.
Maybe have to have Heidi fill in.
Yep. Okay. So I have the Survivor Turkey boot list up here, and it.
Wait, no. Hold on, spoilers. We have to play the.
All right.
Okay. Hold on. These are spoilers for Survivor Turkey.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is
a spoiler.
Warning. Protective action should be taken.
All right. So if anybody's getting ready to watch Survivor Turkey, what season of Survivor Turkey is this?
This is season 5.
Season 5. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, the thing about Survivor Turkey is that, you know, you watch it and then you get very sleepy after.
It's true. It's all that tryptophan.
Yes.
So it turns out that the celebrities, it was pretty evenly matched, but it turns out that the celebrities ended up being the final two. And one of the celebrities ended up, of course, winning. And the weird thing about this season was that there was a public vote instead of having the jury vote.
Okay.
So that's a little bit different.
Yeah.
And a lot of seasons, a lot of different countries have done this instead of having the jury vote. They have the public vote at the end. And the winner was a six-time Olympian who competed in swimming.
Okay.
And he ended up winning the entire thing.
Sure. That's the Hansian model of deciding the winner of Survivor.
Right. And they did this all, it looks like everything was a public vote. So they did it kind of semi-live.
Hmm.
And it went on for 55 days.
Yeah, well, it seems no wonder that the celebrities beat out the random people when it was decided by a public fan vote, right? That seems a little fixed.
Well, yeah, but they ended up, the way that this worked was that they would compete in immunity challenges, and the tribe that was immune would choose one person from the losing tribe to face public vote. And then the tribe themselves also picked somebody. And so then the public voted between the person that the opposing tribe picked and the person that the losing tribe picked.
You know, I can't, we've talked about so many shows. What is that? I feel like that's like a, is that Opposite Worlds or The Quest? Is that also?
Oh, right. I think Opposite Worlds did that. Yeah, The Quest was different.
Well, actually, it played out a lot better on Opposite Worlds Turkey, though.
Is not being a celebrity the opposite of being a celebrity?
Yes.
Okay. So that's something, I think this public vote thing, that's never going to work in the U.S. pretty much ever, because we've tried that. We tried that with the first season of Big Brother, and all the interesting people left in like the first 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So I don't think that particular aspect of it is something we could ever really do. But I think the idea of kind of, instead of bringing back people that have played the game before and potentially like they're a little bit more acclimated than someone who's never been out there and doesn't know what to expect, I think this works a little bit better.
So I think that we could definitely see this format in terms of celebrities versus people who are actual fans, or then maybe have a tribe of returning players too. So, oh, I think we're on board with this. Let's green light this. Good job, Denmark Burnett.
All right. So let's actually, we've kind of combined these ideas now, because the next idea, here's another spin on fans versus favorites. What if we do one team of former players and then one team of C-list celebrities? So the fans are the celebrities.
Okay. That's fine also. I'm good with any of these breakdowns.
Yeah, like we're just going to inject some celebrities in there somehow.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and that was something in France, I think you guys must have covered this, where all the previous contestants were on one tribe and the other tribe was all famous French athletes. So these people are all like physical powerhouses, which I think kind of gave them an edge over the people that were just like random people who had happened to have played Survivor before.
Yeah, and especially if we do this in the three-tribe format, like if we had a season where we're bringing in 10 former athletes, you know, I feel like that's really going to be a problem. But if you keep it to only a tribe of six, I think I'm okay with any configuration of this. If it's six returning players, six super fans, six of this, six of that, sure, let's throw it in there. We can give it a shot.
All right, cool. And how do you feel about an all-celebrity season? Because this is something that every single country that's not the U.S. has tried to do.
Now, I think it's going to be rough, because I think that the celebrities that we're going to get to go play the game are not going to be on the level of the people who know how to play the game already. And I think that it's going to be a pretty basic season of Survivor. And I feel like it's the kind of thing that the fans are not going to love. Maybe some of the casuals would be really into it, but I think that Survivor has done a good job of mixing the fans with celebrities that want to play. Maybe if they did some sort of like a bonus Survivor season where we got some sort of like 2 week Survivor, which was on in like the summer, I think I would definitely be into it. But I feel like if you're going to replace an actual Survivor season with celebrities, the people that you would get are just not going to be that interesting. How many big time celebrities are going to go give up 39 days of their lives to go do Survivor and, you know, be seen at their worst?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a very good point. You can't even, sometimes you can't even pad out an entire Dancing with the Stars season and those people get to eat.
Yeah. So we might get a couple people where it's like, oh, I'd really love to see that person, but are we going to get 16? Are we going to get 20? I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not. And I think this also works better in other countries, because most other countries have a lot of celebrities who are only famous in that country. They're only relevant within like the borders of their own country. And in the U.S., our celebrities who are only famous in the U.S. are not really all that famous.
Right. So, no, I think I'm out on an all-celebrity version of Survivor. Again, I like the idea of here's the celebrity tribe. Here's six people that we found that are going to be good, and let's mix them in with people who are really better at playing the game. Or you might have one or two celebrities that are really good at playing the game. I don't think that Jeff Kent or Lisa Welch or any slouches or even Cliff Robinson coming in to play the game. So I think that that's fine if you keep it to a small number. I like how Survivor has done it in the past.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's almost always worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
So, okay. So here's one that comes from Survivor Serbia.
Ooh.
Survivor Serbia has Redemption Island, but the winner of the Redemption Island challenge that is going to come back into the game gets to also bring a buddy.
What buddy? Like from home?
No, not from home. From Redemption Island.
Okay.
So, like, Ozzy wins and gets to go back in, but he also gets to, like, pick somebody from his group of people that's sitting there on Redemption Island. So he gets to bring back, like, Whitney Duncan.
How many people are on Redemption Island?
I believe it's cumulative. Like, everybody stays there and they have one challenge to bring you back into the game at the end.
Yeah.
So a lot of places do their Redemption Island like that, where everybody just goes to this like third island, and one place calls it Purgatory, which I think is hilarious. And you just hang out there and you still survive. You're not really playing the game. You just have somebody new come every week, and then you have a couple of challenges, and the winner of the challenge goes back and everybody else stays there.
We talk about this when we get to Survivor Blood versus Water in the Evolution of Strategy, where I don't hate Redemption Island like some people do, but I feel like it's fine if you end it at the merge. So if this was a season where we're going to have Redemption Island, the first six boots, it's going to be a little bit more of the Outcast tribe. I'm sorry, Andrew Savage. But if it's going to be more of like the first six boots all go to Redemption Island, one person gets to come back into the game and they get to pick a buddy that's also going to join them at the merge, I'm fine with that also. I just think that after the merge, I don't want to see somebody come back at the final five.
Yeah, I agree. And some places bring back people into the game two or three times, and it ends up, like, it seems like you get somebody in the finals who's been on the island for like 3 days.
Yeah, I think in most Survivor seasons, I think the most boring part of the season is really episodes 2 through 6. And so if you want to spice that up and add in some Redemption Island there, or if you have like the first boot, the second boot, and then do Redemption Island in episodes 3 through 6, and then somebody gets back in at the merge and they get to bring a buddy, I have no problem. I think that could only help spice up a Survivor season, give some more juice to those episodes that are pre-merge, and it adds a little bit more of a wild card in post-merge. I'm fine with all that, but don't do it at here's Final Five, here's Ozzy, he's two challenges away from winning the whole game.
Yeah, to be honest, I think you're absolutely right that anything after the merge doesn't really need to be spiced up.
No, it's fine. It's fine how it is. You're only going to make it where eventually, if you do it after the merge, it's going to be somewhere where somebody's going to come back in from Redemption Island who was on Redemption Island the whole game. You know, Ozzy was one challenge away in South Pacific from winning the game, and he was on Redemption Island the whole post-merge game. So I think if you want to do this coming into the merge where you have two people that were pre-merge, people get back into the game, that's fine. But now you still have a lot of people back in the game after the merge. So maybe you want to merge a little bit later.
Yeah.
Merge at final 10, and then you bring people in, and then they're back to 12.
Yeah, I think we've actually been merging too early, I think, in recent seasons, but that's just me.
Can't merge early enough for me.
I don't know, man. I think if you got 13 people at Tribal Council, it's really hard to keep everybody straight. I have a short attention span.
Yeah.
You know?
For me, I really just feel like the biggest problem in any Survivor season is how do you spice up that 3, 4, 5, 6 episodes?
Yeah, it's true. So I think this is something that I think could work pretty well in that regard.
Okay.
And I should add in here that I wrote down a lot of twists as I was reading through and like watching YouTube clips and such, but I rejected anything out of hand that you guys have already talked about. Like when you and Steven did your two different Survivor Think Tank specials, like anything we already decided whether or not it was going to Samoa, I just rejected it. So I'm going almost entirely on things that I don't believe you guys have ever talked about.
Little did we know that Steven was going to Samoa.
No kidding.
Cambodia in his case.
Yeah, he's taking a holiday in Cambodia.
Yeah, who knew?
Who knew? All right, so here's one from Survivor Brazil. We do a final three at the end, but the final four immunity challenge ends up being 2-on-2.
2v2.
Yeah, so you give away two immunity necklaces going into the finals, and then you have two people that the other two people can decide who they want to bring with them.
It's a little different than what we're doing the whole way through. I'm kind of feeling like it's a little bit of a different game at that point. It's a game that values the competition wins more so than that. I don't hate it. I think it would be certainly exciting, but I think it would play out where you'd have a person who was the best strategist, but who was bad at the competitions getting voted off at that final four spot more often.
Yeah, and I know that you tend to favor the people that are the good strategists who aren't necessarily good in the competitions, and I have no idea why that would be.
I just think we're going to have more and more seasons where somebody ends up played the best game, just gets voted off at four because they couldn't win that immunity or couldn't be one of the top two people to win immunities, and you're going to get more people who were not that great at the strategy part of the game winning the immunities. I think it's fine how it is. I think we're improving something that doesn't need to be improved.
Yeah, I guess so. I can see that. And I think a lot of it would also have to depend on what that challenge is. Because if it's something that's purely physical, I don't think that necessarily brings you the best final three that you could have.
I think if you're doing that, I think Ozzy is going on to win South Pacific.
Yeah, and some of these twists that I was watching, I have observed that a lot of the foreign editions of the show tend to make more of their challenges have more of a say in what happens in the game. Like, they will just randomly, some of the challenges will decide who gets eliminated. Like, they'll just have an individual challenge and the first people get immunity and then the last people go home.
Wow.
And that's happened a few times that I've come across. And sometimes they even just use the challenge to decide who's going to be in the finals. And this is a season I've got a couple of case studies that we're going to talk about in detail, but in one of the seasons of Survivor Belgium versus Netherlands, they would just like randomly vote somebody out. And then the very next tribal council, there wouldn't be a tribal council. There'd be a challenge. And they decided the final two from a challenge of four.
Wow.
Which I don't think would work here, but I thought it was very interesting to watch.
Now, is every season Belgium versus Netherlands?
I believe so. Like, this iteration of the show. And there have been a lot of seasons where they have stacked like two countries against each other or more. Like, there is one that's Survivor the Baltics. And the weird thing about that one is they decided that going into it, that the finalists are going to be three of them, and they have one from each country. So if you're like the last person from Latvia, you are automatically immune until the finals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's also, there was Austria versus Germany, which works very well because there's a common language there.
Yes, a historic rivalry.
Right. There was a Survivor Africa where everybody was from a different country. And I've talked before about my love for Big Brother Africa. So this was kind of, yeah, oh yeah. This was the one season of Big Brother that I got super hooked on, was the 2001 season of Big Brother Africa.
Okay.
And it was a person from each of like 14 different countries. And it was very fascinating to watch because some of these people were very, you know, they're very middle class, and some of them were, you know, they were from the bush. So it was really, really interesting. It was a great dynamic.
So go back to Belgium versus Netherlands. So let's say there's one person who is left from Belgium. So it's sort of like a Survivor Palau scenario. And so the one person left over from Belgium is the person who's going to go to the final two, Alex Belgium. So he goes to the final two. So he's immune the whole way through, and he can't be voted out?
This is how it worked in the Baltics. In Belgium, it didn't work that way.
Okay.
But yeah, in the Baltics, if you have your Stephanie Latvia Grossa is the last person from her tribe.
Right.
And she gets to be immune. If there's like eight people left, she's immune for the next like six tribal councils.
Okay, so she would be able to go all the way to the end. But Alex Belgium could get voted out.
Yes.
Okay, so it wouldn't just be cakewalk to the final twos to go up against Julia Netherlandauer. So that would be not as easy as it looks.
Right. It's not quite as easy. But in Survivor the Baltics, they wanted to make sure, and I think this is a very real concern. It's one of the reasons we've never had something like this in the U.S. They want to make sure that, like, if everybody from the Latvia tribe gets decimated, I don't mean to pick on Latvia here, but everybody from the Latvia tribe gets decimated, what's your incentive if you live in Latvia? Why are you still watching the show? So they decided they're just going to have one from each.
Again, is this like a cost savings measure where two countries can get together? I mean, I don't know how the networks work in Europe, where countries that share a common language, they could just like team up and do a Survivor season together.
Oh, sure. And they don't even need to share a common language. Well, they do, tend to, and again, we'll talk a little bit more about Survivor Greece versus Turkey, but what I noticed was as soon as they merged, everybody was speaking English to each other.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of times, like, people will just switch over to English. Like, Amazing Race Asia was another example where they had teams from a lot of different Asian countries because they had the AZN network, which distributes television in a lot of Asian countries. So they just got somebody from each of those countries that are in those markets.
Got it.
And then those people, all the show was aired in English and everybody spoke English all the time.
Okay.
So that's kind of how it works.
I don't see the same thing. Much to the disappointment of many Canadian fans, I don't think we're going to see like a US versus Canada season of Survivor.
No, I don't think we are. And I feel bad for everybody in Canada that loves Survivor and is dying to go on the show, because I kind of don't see Canada doing like they did at the Amazing Race. I don't think they're going to ever have their own Survivor either.
I disagree. I feel like they might.
Yeah. The great thing about, I think the reason it worked so well for Amazing Race is because they were able to do it in Canada. And I don't know that they would film Survivor Canada in Canada, although Survivor the Baltics does film in the Baltics. So who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? So I got two more twists that I think are interesting that could work. And here's one that happens in a lot of seasons. They call it a joker. And what it is like right around, like in that kind of no man's land that you're talking about, like episodes 2 through 6, like sometime around episode 6, they just bring in a random new contestant who just enters the game in the middle of season and goes on to one of the tribes and plays. Sometimes they have one for each tribe. Sometimes it's celebrity. Sometimes it's someone who's played before. I think they do something kind of similar on Big Brother sometimes, but you know, all of a sudden, here comes a new challenger, and they just plunk them in like they were an outcast, but they're not an outcast.
Okay, are they like a saboteur?
They're not a saboteur. They're just playing the game.
So what country is this happening in?
This is happening in a lot of countries. It originated, it's pretty early twist. It originated in Scandinavia, but it's also spread to a lot of different areas.
You have somebody just comes in. It could be like a returning player where it's just like, here we go. It's the middle of the game. And now here comes Russell. And he's just like on your tribe now.
Yep.
And he's like a regular player. He has a chance to win the game.
Right.
I think it sort of hurts the integrity of the game. I mean, do people just not vote that person off immediately?
A lot of times they vote that person off immediately.
Yeah. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, I think it would work once, and I think it wouldn't work ever again. Because they do, like you remember on Big Brother when they talked about Operation Revolving Door?
Yeah.
That would be what would happen after the first time.
I mean, do you set it up at the beginning of the game? Like, say, hypothetically, you have where it's Redemption Island season, where you have Rob versus Russell, and instead of coming into the game right away, Ometepe and Zapatera, they play the first 12 days of the game on their own. And then, at some point, maybe instead of a tribe swap, you have episode 5, either Rob or Russell comes into the game at that point. I think what makes that interesting there, even though it's somewhat not fair, and there's a lot of people who would argue that sticking Rob or Russell on tribes with new players wasn't fair in the first place, at least the tribes have gotten their feet under them. And there's a little bit of, it makes it harder for the returning player who comes back into the season to get a foothold in the game, because there's sort of like an establishment in each of these tribes where if Boston Rob shows up on day 12 and is like, all right, hey, here's what we're going to do. Maybe, you know, there's already a Grant Matos sort of hierarchy of people that's going on where there's like more of a resistance against something like that. Or maybe Zapatera is like, boy, we're really hurting. We could use Russell right now.
Yeah, I think absolutely. If they kind of, and even if they know it's coming, like they know someone's coming into the game, they don't know who it is, they can collectively decide, like, you know, we're in a lot of trouble. It's going to be great to have an extra pair of hands around here. Or it's like, you know, we don't want that kind of aggravation. When he gets here, we're just going to vote him right out.
I think that there would be something interesting. What I would like to see have happen, if you are going to do that, I want to see it up front. Hey, these people are in play. I don't have it be a surprise. Hey, it's day 15. All of a sudden, you know, Rob and Russell are here, or whoever the two returning players are, or, you know, Malcolm and Cochran are here, whoever it's going to be. I'd like to have that be up front. Here are these two people. And maybe you have some sort of a thing where they're sort of like at the challenges, or they're at tribal council or something. And they're also living on some sort of like Redemption Island thing together.
Yeah, and I would also watch the miniseries of Rob and Russell living on Redemption Island together by themselves.
Especially if you have two people who are rivals, two people who have bad blood, and they have to live together also, and that's part of the show, of them trying to get along, and then maybe like they're having like some sort of a like challenge against each other. That's a lot of airtime that we're devoting to that, but I think it would be interesting to check in. It's just like how you used to do those check-ins on Redemption Island of like, oh, here's Candace with Rupert on Redemption Island. What's going on there? I think it would be interesting to see these two people who don't get along have to live together on an island, and then they both come into the game. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. That one's going to Samoa.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Because again, we're doing stuff that's spicing up the pre-merge.
Right, right.
I like this.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the reason that they started having it in the first place. Like, they bring this Joker in and it shakes everybody up in the pre-merge, where usually you kind of already see who's making the merge by like episode 3.
Okay. I like it.
Okay. So here's one that every time I read about this, I start cracking up because I think it's hilarious and it's so mean. But this plays into, this is part of one of the YouTube clips that I sent you. And I don't know if you noticed this because basically, before we started recording this, I sent Rob a YouTube link that was to some previews from a particular season of Denmark's version of Expedition Robinson. This is from the 2009 season. And one of these clips is basically, it's just like the host yelling at everybody, but you get some little clips of people that are wearing their buffs from their tribes, and you see them on the beach. And I don't know if you noticed what was written on the yellow buff that these people were wearing.
What was written?
It said dumb.
Dumb. Okay.
It said dumb because what they did for this season, they made everybody take an IQ test prior to the start of the competition and split them into two tribes, the smart tribe and the dumb tribe.
And people didn't walk off the set?
Well, some people did quit the season, but I don't think it was related.
Yeah.
It was like, I guess the dumb people had a fire lit under them. They wanted to prove that they weren't actually dumb. But yeah, this was one of several twists in what I believe might be the most cracktastic season of Survivor that has ever aired in any country ever.
Okay, so what did they call the season? What was the actual translation that Denmark Burnett came up with?
It was just called Robinson Expedition in 2009.
And it wasn't called Smart versus Dumb?
It was not called Smart versus Dumb. We would call it Smart versus Dumb here.
Who ended up winning out?
Smart Tribe.
Smart Tribe.
But they did it. Yeah. But the final four appeared to be the final four was two dumb tribe people, a smart tribe person, and a Joker.
And the two dumb people couldn't seal the deal?
Yeah, two dumb people couldn't seal the deal, apparently. But they also, yeah.
I feel like in America, I don't think that we would call it Survivor dumb versus smart. I feel like that they would have some sort of a clever name.
Yeah, they would probably try to stratify it slightly differently. Like they'd call it like street smarts versus book smarts or something like that.
Okay, so that would be an interesting way to sort of frame it, because I think you need something that's going to have the people who are the low IQ people. You're going to want them to sort of have something to hang their hat on.
Right. I think they wouldn't. It wouldn't fly in the U.S. You can't just make people wear a buff that says dumb in big letters.
Right. They have some sort of like a dunce cap buff that they have to wear.
Right.
So I don't think you'd be able to get people to be in on that. It's interesting, though, where maybe could you do it where you don't tell the people what the tribe designations are, where it's like Jeff is in the helicopter. He's like, but what these tribes don't know is that they've been split up in a way we've never done before by IQ. And have this tribe, this tribe, they'll wear blue buffs and they had the lowest IQs of the group. This tribe, they had the smartest IQ. Is it better to be smarter or is it true? Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, that's how they would have to do it. I'm sure that's how they would do it.
And maybe at some point at the merge, you could tell the two tribes what happened. Like, we did something we never did this season. We divided the tribes by IQ. So you can decide, do you want to stick with the people that you were with, but know they had lower IQs, or are you more scared of the people that have all high IQs?
Yeah, I think someone from the smart tribe would probably try to mutiny over to the dumb tribe and think they could run the place.
Yeah. And then Heidi Strobel would come out of retirement and she would be the captain of the high IQ team.
Of course she would, because didn't she have like the highest IQ ever on Survivor?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So that was good.
Like her and David Murphy?
Yes.
That was pretty much the only thing he had going for him.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So that kind of segues into, because I want to talk about the season of Survivor Denmark in some more detail, because every other twist they introduced in this game was completely crazy pants and would never work in the US.
Okay, go for it.
All right, so this was something you guys talked about on Think Tank 2 to some extent, but there are some bits of it that you didn't really end up coming up with. But they did have Survivor the Mole in Denmark in 2009. And they had somebody who came into the game who was totally not the person he said he was. He just pretended to be this other guy. And then he could complete sabotage challenges for his own, like, side prizes. And he was able to kind of keep this going for a while. And then at some point in the game, he was going to exit the game on some false pretenses. And their false pretenses were hilarious, because this guy was an actor who came into the game pretending to be a totally different guy. And then they were going to reveal in like episode 5 that he needed to be evicted from the game because he was a murderer.
I mean, that seems a little Joe Schmo show.
It's very Joe Schmo show. I guess that might be where they came up with it. But after that, they got rid of him, and then they went to everybody else who was still in the game. They said, who here might be interested in being the mole? Come talk to us. And so some people applied to be the mole, and they chose somebody, and that person became the mole. And at this point, they had a thing. They had a method by which you could guess who the mole is. And they had a thing called the mole gong. And if you decided you knew who the mole was, you go up and you bang on the mole gong and you make a guess. And if you're right, the mole stops being the mole and stops like being, you know, mole is just a regular player you can vote out. But if they're wrong, they get eliminated on the spot.
Yeah, this is a different show than Survivor at this point.
This is a totally different show.
I'm out on the mole and the saboteur. Because the thing that's going to happen, and this is what has happened on Big Brother, where Big Brother in Big Brother 8, they did America's Player. In Big Brother 12, they did the saboteur. And then still, like in Big Brother 16, people get voted out like, oh, this person's America's Player. We got to vote them out. So anytime anybody is doing something interesting on this show, the people in the house, oh, it's this person's saboteur. Let's just vote them out. So I think it is sort of a short-sighted thing. It would be a great season in which they did that. But then every single season where somebody is doing bad in the challenge, like, oh, vote them out right away. That's the saboteur. That's the mole.
Yeah. And I mean, the reason that the show The Mole is so entertaining is because they don't vote. They take a test. So, yeah, once you introduce voting into there, then you have people just trying to vote people out so that you don't get people messing with you anymore.
Yeah, it's a different show. Okay, I'm out on them all.
Yeah, you're going to be out on all of these because we're going down the rabbit hole now. All right. We're getting weirder and weirder.
So, Jess, are we officially into talking about the ideas that won't work in the U.S.?
Yeah, these ideas will not work.
Okay, all right. So before we go too far into ideas that won't work, but will probably be very fun to talk about, let me take a moment and thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And these are friends over at PokerStars, because Jess, PokerStars has the best play money poker software in the world. And it's appropriate that we're talking about international editions of Survivor, because PokerStars has the best in the world on desktop and mobile for Android and Apple. They've got the biggest selection of poker games anywhere, including No Limit Hold'em, Stud, Draw, and special variants of the Fast Fold Zoom Poker, which I don't know if any of these games include a joker, like pre-merge versions of International Survivor, but you can go and find out.
That sounds fantastic.
I don't think there's any jokers, but I will be hosting our own RHAP Poker Stars game in the next few weeks. It's actually going to be on September 12th. And so I will announce the winner on the podcast. You can go to pokerstars.net/RobSestrino or the link robiswebsite.com/poker to sign up and find out more details. You can play for free as long as you want with no charge. However, if you want to jump into the high stakes games with special promotional events, you could buy extra chips for a few dollars. They've got all sorts of people on PokerStars that are using it. Daniel Nigranu, who is the former poker mentor of Boston Rob, he's on PokerStars, as well as Barry Greenstein and Vanessa Selps. You could play against them all online. In particular, from August 9th to the 30th, they're running the second annual Play Money World Championship of Online Poker. They've got major sports stars like Cristiano Ronaldo. How about that, Jess?
Wow.
Yeah.
You got some big names. These are big international superstars.
And Neymar, could either of those guys be playing an international Survivor at some point?
They could. It depends on the season, but we could probably get him into one of those three-part fans versus favorites versus celebrities.
Sure. And for the sure super competitive players out there, there's a billionaire club, a VIP program for users that are able to turn their million chips into a billion chips. So for new players, you can start out with 1,000 chips, but signups via Rob as a Podcast will get 1 million chips to play with, credited within 24 hours of sign up. Sign up today at pokerstars.net/Rob Cisternino. And if you can't spell my name, I made the link, robiswebsite.com/poker. All right, Jess, fire when ready with more ideas that won't work in the United States.
All right. Well, I got some kind of hot takes here. These are just like weird little quirks that I've found that we can go into.
These are hot takes, not cute takes.
These are definitely not cute takes.
Got it.
Although this one might be kind of cute. In the Philippines, they've got a redemption island that's called Purgatory Island. And you're continuing to do all of the Survivor things. You get there, you got to build your shelter. You even have a buff, and the buff is like a blank buff because you're in Purgatory.
Got it.
And you also get a dog.
A dog?
You get a dog.
All right, well, alert Eddie Fox to this.
Yeah, this is Eddie Fox's kind of twist.
So why do you get a dog?
For companionships, I guess.
So does everybody get the same dog? Is there just like a dog that lives on Redemption Island?
I think they just have a dog there that just hangs out. But like the first person that's there is by themselves. They have a dog because they don't want them to go crazy.
Does the first person there get to name it?
Maybe. Or maybe the dog comes with a name. Like, you know, sometimes you get to name the chickens and sometimes the chickens have names.
That's true. So you get the dog. Do people ever try to eat the dog?
Nobody tries to eat the dog.
Good.
I don't think you're allowed.
Does the dog get to come into the game if it wins this challenge?
Maybe. Like it depends on the challenge. Maybe the dog could win one of these things. Like, especially that one where you like run off the dock and try to catch something in the air. Yeah. Dogs would be great at that. Just, like Rover wins immunity.
So there's just no reason why the dog is at Redemption Island.
Not really. No.
Okay.
I guess just to make it more entertaining. I mean, everybody loves it when there's a dog.
In what country are they doing a dog at Redemption Island?
Philippines.
Philippines. There you go. Is it Tata the Bushman's dog?
No, it's not Tata the Bushman's dog.
You named the dog Tata the Bush dog?
I would totally name my dog Tata the Bush dog.
All right, so is this a hit? Is the dog a fan favorite?
I guess so. I didn't really catch any articles that said anything to the contrary, but I mean, it's a dog. People are going to love the dog.
Sure. Who are the good dogs? Who are the bad dogs?
If someone who has seen this season, because I couldn't find it, if someone who's actually seen this season could enlighten us on how this actually worked with the dog, I would love to know. Because all I got was like a passing mention of it. I'm like, oh, really? A dog? Awesome.
Is the dog well fed or is it living off of meager rations also?
I think they probably feed the dog. And I don't think you're allowed to eat the dog food. That's your next question.
Okay. Because I would feel like if the dog did not get fed, I feel like it would become increasingly mean. And I think that would be interesting to have to fend off the increasingly hungry dog. Because we talked about, can you eat the dog? But like, at some point, you don't feed the dog long enough, the dog's going to eat you.
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the dog hunts for its own food.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe you can train the dog to help you hunt.
Yeah, like when I think it was in Survivor China where they came in with like ducks.
Oh, the pelican. Yeah.
Not Pelican Pete, but other pelicans that helped them catch fish. Maybe it's some sort of a hunting dog.
Maybe. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, all right.
Is it like some sort of a Saint Bernard that has like a flask of alcohol around its neck?
Yes, but it's very hungry, so you have the challenge is to try to take the flask off of it.
Got it.
Without it biting you.
Yeah, maybe the dog could keep you warm at night.
Yeah, totally.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that might be the best thing to recommend the dog.
Yeah.
Like, it gets really cold out there.
Okay. Is it true the dog is named Bob Dog?
No, but that's another good name if you get to name the dog.
Yeah. All right, Jess. What else will not be working? I don't think we need a dog at Redemption Island.
Right. Well, also in the Philippines. If you get medevaced, you have 24 hours to seek treatment and then return to the game.
Ooh.
And unclear whether they feed you while you're being treated, but you have some time to kind of like get over whatever's wrong with you. Like if you're Bruce, you could go poop and then come back to the game. And if you aren't back within that 24 hours, then you're gone.
Yeah, I don't have a big problem with this.
Yeah, I don't either, especially since I think it sort of happened in those earlier seasons that we didn't hear about. Like in Survivor Africa, when they were giving people IVs, like we didn't see that on camera, but it was happening.
Yeah, I think that the rule should be if you have to miss a tribal council, that's it. But if Survivor is like, okay, our doctors have determined that we can take you out of the game and work on you for 24 hours, and if you feel up to it, we'll put you back in the game. I don't have an issue with this.
Yeah, I don't either. I think it's okay.
And maybe if you want to do the thing like the Shireen and Will letters thing, where it's like, is there anybody out here who has an issue with this? Raise your hand. And if you do, we won't do it. And if everybody says, yeah, it's fine, whatever.
Well, doesn't that open it up to people like intentionally injuring people?
Well, if you intentionally injure somebody, then you're out of the game anyway.
Yeah.
But if you are raising your hand to say, I have a problem with this person getting medical treatment, one, you look like the biggest jerk ever.
That's true.
Where I have an issue with this person getting medical treatment. And so I feel like that's you can raise your hand and stop it, but I think it's at the peril of your own game at that point.
Right. Well, and it's not that you have a problem with the person getting medical treatment. It's that you have a problem with this person getting medical treatment and remaining in the game.
Yeah. I think that maybe we could do it that way. So I don't have a big problem with this.
Yeah. All right. So there's one more Survivor Philippines twist I want to talk about.
And in
about.
Fairness, I feel like there's a little bit of a precedent on this. And I feel like at least like with, they have like with James in Heroes versus Villains, it's like, all right, you know, James, stay around after the challenge. I want to have a look at that knee. Where it's like, they could do whatever they want to do on him. And if they want to like then bring him back into the game. So I don't think it's that different from what we already have.
Yeah. Yeah. Shoot him up with steroids, send him back out there. He's fine.
Does it work that quick?
I don't know. Yeah, so Philippines did a blood versus water season that I thought was really interesting. Well, for starters, it was an all celebrity season.
Okay.
So already that's weird. But people were either friends or they like hosted a show together or they were dating or they were related. And the pairs started on the same tribe and they competed as one entity for the, at least the first couple of tribal councils.
Okay.
So you would have your pairs all. Like, they would work together because they were all on the same tribe. And then when they were going to decide, like, who to vote for, you would vote for the pair.
Right. I think this is like, they've done this on Big Brother celebrity versions. Right. Like, Spencer and Heidi, I think, were in the Big Brother UK house.
Well, that was, they were kind of a special case, though, because they wouldn't, they did this on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, too, and kill me because I know this. But they refused to compete as individuals, and they would only go on the show if they could compete as a pair.
Okay, so the 10 pairs are like this. They also did a season of Big Brother that was like this also.
Yeah.
Little Till Death Do Us Part, the rarely mentioned Big Brother 9.
All right, I'll skip that one. I've got my CBS All Access. I was thinking about watching one of these seasons. That's not one I'm going to watch.
No, don't check out the Big Brother 9.
Right. And they also, they had this weird twist where some of the time they would have a reward, and they would offer the reward to a particular pair, and they could take the reward, which would be like food or a comfort item or something, or sometimes it was immunity, but they would also then have to take a consequence that went with it, and frequently the consequence was one of you has to go to the other tribe, and you're both still immune, but now you are separated.
Yeah, I don't love this. I think
it's too complicated and it's kind of dumb.
I think it makes the game less exciting because instead of starting with 20, and then I know the, you unmerge them at some point, but I think it makes the votes less interesting because there's less people that can switch over. You kind of know what the vote is going to be no matter what.
Let's talk about how ties are resolved.
Great.
Because this is interesting because they're resolved in a variety of ways. In different seasons. In Chile, if you have two people in a tribal council who have an equal number of votes, whoever is immune gets to cast an additional vote. And they break the tie.
Okay. I want to make sure I got this.
All right. There's a tribal council. Two people have an equal number of votes. We have a tie. And to settle the tie, they let the person with immunity cast an additional vote.
Okay. This is interesting. I mean, it's sort of like the way in Big Brother that they allow the HOH to break a tie. So there's one person right. that's designated as the tiebreaker. But in this case, that person would have two votes. I'm trying to think. I think it's less interesting than what we have now.
I think it is, too.
Yeah, because I think that what we have now is pretty compelling in terms of picking the rocks and ultimately seeing if anybody's going to flip. It makes it so there's less likely that there's going to be a tie. And we know from Blood versus Water, that's really interesting, the idea of a tie. So no, I'm out on this. I think this is less interesting than what we're already doing.
Right. Right. And we've had a lot of speculation when nobody really knows how this would work in the U.S. But what if there was a tie at final tribal council?
Yeah, we don't know.
And we don't know how it would happen here, but it has happened in a couple of other countries.
Yes. Oh, what did they do?
In Israel and France, there was a final tribal council tie. And so they just crowned co-champions, like on Jeopardy.
So they both got $1 million?
I think they split the prize.
Okay. That seems strangely unsatisfying.
They both got to claim the title of sole survivor, which probably made Russell Hantz very unhappy.
Yeah.
And in the Belgium/Netherlands version, there was a final tie and they had all the former contestants who wanted to vote got to vote for who they thought should win.
So the people from previous seasons got to vote?
Right.
Hmm.
So they there's a tie at final tribal council next season. They call you up and they're like, hey, Rob, you want to cast a vote? And then 400 people that have been on the show before all get to cast a vote.
Yeah. And they just vote for the person who's the nicest to them on Twitter that season.
Basically. Yeah. There were 74 former contestants who ended up voting in this particular instance.
And was it lopsided?
I think it was pretty close, actually.
Okay.
So those are some interesting tie resolution scenarios. And we've talked about this before. The longest running season I could find was a version of Survivor Turkey that went on for 134 days.
Yeah.
That we shouldn't do to our people.
No, we should not. I mean, it's 100 days more than a regular season of Survivor.
Exactly.
How were the conditions? Is this one of those things where it's instead of going to, you live at this camp and then you can go to this other camp, which has a better zip line?
I mean, I've watched some of a different season of Turkish Survivor and they look like they're at least cleaning up occasionally. They don't look quite as haggard as people do at the end of a Survivor season in the U.S. So I think the conditions are probably a little easier.
I mean, how many episodes are in a 134-day season of Turkey Survivor?
I think they run the season for much longer. I think in a lot of countries, they do run a season for, season will go 6 months.
Is it like Big Brother, where is it more closer to real time?
Some of them are closer to real time. And I think this was one of the cases where it was closer to real time.
Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, that's something I'm not signing up for.
And what's the prize on the 134-day version of Survivor?
It's an amount of money. I don't think it's
Is it more?
It is. Oh, no, it is. The prize for the first season of the show was 150,000 euros. Second and third seasons, 250,000 euros. And for the fourth season, they switched over to dollars for some reason, and you get $500,000.
Okay, so it's less money.
It's less money.
It's less money. It's longer. And so, I mean, it's still a lot of money.
Yeah, it is a lot of money.
I bet there's plenty of returning players that would go do Survivor for 134 days.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Money.
Yeah, and this was season 9, so I guess they got $500,000.
Yeah. Were all the seasons that length?
No, not all the seasons. The first season was 39 days, like in the U.S. Second season, 46 days. Fourth season, 48 days.
Okay.
55 days was Greece versus Turkey, which is one we're going to go into. It varies.
Okay.
I think it just kind of the more popular it got, the longer they figured they could stretch it out for.
I mean, we experimented with 42 days in Australia. I feel like Survivor feels like that didn't work. 39 days is pretty sacred at this point, I think.
Yeah, that was not fun.
Yeah. The Australia finale is pretty brutal.
Yeah, the Australian finale, people were practically dead.
Yeah, and also it was really boring television.
Right.
The finale is with three people. I don't think there's one challenge in the first hour of the show. They're doing arts and crafts and talking about their journey. And 45 million people watched it, but it was very boring.
Yeah, and the following season you had far fewer people watching.
Yeah, so a lot of extenuating circumstances there, but that was a very boring finale up until Colby takes Tina to the end.
Right.
Okay, what else you got, Jess, that we're not going to do in the U.S.?
All right, so I've got some kind of more extensive case studies we can talk about.
Ooh.
Oh, we also have, in Japan, this is just kind of a small dumb thing, but at the merge, both of the tribes burn their camps to the ground and start fresh on a new beach. So I think that's entertaining.
Okay. We've done that a few times where teams have to make up a new tribe or make up a new shelter.
But they don't have to burn down their own camp.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. So
Butch is in favor of doing that at any point.
Well, he loves that firewood.
Yeah.
All right. So This did sort of come up in Think Tank too, but I don't think the person that contributed knew that this has actually happened at some point.
Survivor Hamburger?
So, no. Sadly, no. I could not find a Survivor Hamburger.
Okay.
But in Belgium and the Netherlands in 2007, they started the game with 100 freaking players.
Okay, and then how did they go from there?
All right, so we started out with 100 players. In episode 2, 25 contestants walked off because they were having none of it. In episode 3, they picked tribes, and 21 people out of those people weren't picked, so they left the game. And then in episode 4, they eliminated half of one of the tribes. And then in episode 5, they eliminated an entire other tribe.
Okay.
And then in episode 6, they had a challenge that eliminated a further 8 contestants, and the rest were merged, and they were the jury. So some of the eliminations, they would have a challenge, and they just eliminate whoever lost the challenge, and some of them were votes. And some of them, like the tribal council, would happen in broad daylight, and they'd just like come into the camp, be like, time to vote someone out. I watched a recap of this season that was about an hour and a half long, and it was weird. It was really weird.
So, but, which country is this again?
This is Belgium and the Netherlands.
Okay, so,
and I don't speak Flemish or Dutch, so there was that too. But fortunately, the version I watched, like some of it was subtitled. So if somebody said something that I thought was important, I'd just like Google Translate it and try to figure out what was going on from there.
I would be okay with if we wanted to start Survivor with 100 people, but it was sort of like the American Idol auditions where it's like Lynn Spillman, Parvati, and John Kierhofer sitting at the table and people are coming through and sitting there and it's like, okay, you're going to Samoa. And you want to start with 100 people like that, but I don't think we need to get 100 people on the beach.
No, you probably don't. And they actually kind of did this with the season of The Biggest Loser as well. They had one person from every state for season 3. And then from the people...
No gerrymandering like for Biggest Loser?
No gerrymandering. They all showed up. There's no gerrymandering either.
No.
But they all showed up and they did a workout with the trainers and they interviewed. And then they chose like 14 people that were going to be there. And they sent everybody else home and they said, okay, while you're at home, you keep working out, you keep dieting. And then they brought in 2 jokers based on like who had lost the most weight at the end of a certain amount of time. They brought those people into the game.
Okay.
So there's precedent for this in the US, but this was really crazy pants. It was hard to follow. And like some of the people you barely even got like a second of screen time.
Was the person that they brought in a Kentucky joker?
No, it was, it was like North Dakota, and I can't remember who the other guy was, but they got voted out immediately.
Okay.
So anyway, Belgium, Netherlands, back to this.
combining for another stellar season of Survivor.
Yes, combining. And it was actually kind of interesting because like Flemish and Dutch are close enough in language that they could communicate with each other. And that was kind of interesting. And there was a lot of national pride going on there, but they didn't divide the tribes along national lines, which they've done most of the other times when they've tried to do something like this.
Okay.
So, and then in the final tribal council was weird. Everyone got to ask questions and they got to say
all 100 people.
No, okay. The jury. It was like 9 people on the jury and everyone asked their questions and then everybody voted. But when they finished voting, they'd get their parchment instead of putting it in the urn. They came back with it. And then they showed it to the finalists and explained their vote.
Oh.
So that was interesting. And that was, and then the winner was this total challenge beast who had basically dominated the physical aspect of the game. And people admitted that was why they were voting for him.
Okay.
But he seemed like a nice guy. So
there's really nothing from this that we're going to put into the US version.
We could never put anything. Although the runner-up was wearing a 3 Wolf Moon shirt, so if somebody wants to bring one of those into the game, I'm totally happy with that.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yes.
I like it. 3 Wolf Courtney Moon.
Yes, 3 Wolf Courtney Moon. And the other big...
Julie Wolf Courtney Moon.
All right.
You're like, who's Julie Wolf? Back row Jerry.
I remember Julie Wolf.
Yeah.
She was a ruggedly handsome woman.
I'll say.
Yes. All right, so the other, like, we've talked a little bit about the Survivor Greece versus Turkey has come up already, and this is an interesting case because it looks to me, and I've watched some of this on YouTube, you can find the whole season of this on YouTube if you look. And the interesting thing about this season was that it looks like they had different editors working on it, depending on which country they were in. Because if you were watching the Greek version, you got a lot more of the Greek people. And they also, they had two hosts, a Turkish guy and a Greek guy. And there was, the other big twist to this was they had the Greek tribe, the Turkish tribe, and whoever won immunity got to vote out someone from the losing tribe.
By themselves?
No, they would each cast a vote.
Okay, with the other tribe.
Right, and so the tribal council, the losing tribe would shuffle in, and the host would come in with his urn, and he'd set it down, and he would open it up, and he'd read the votes, just like they had voted, but nobody had voted. He'd just read the other tribe's votes.
Oh, so the tribe that lost, they don't even get to pick the person that they're going to vote for? The winning tribe cast their votes?
That's right.
I don't like that. I feel like it would be fun if they got like one vote.
Yeah, I think so.
Where before they leave the challenge, okay, and write down your vote for the other tribe, and then we'll add that, and they don't know who they voted for. I feel like they've done stuff like that, like in the early teens. I feel like there was a lot of, okay, one person gets to either cast a vote or protect the other one person from the other tribe.
Yeah, you had like your black vote, which I didn't bring up because I know you guys have talked about it at length before. And you had your, like, there's like the cursed pearl and the black pearl and the white pearl, and each one of them involves like taking away a vote or giving a vote. There's a lot of that going on in a lot of the foreign editions of the show.
Okay, how did it play out on Greece versus Turkey?
The Turkish team basically dominated the Greek team. Yes. Until the merge. There were four people. I think it merged like 6-4.
Is it true the winner from that season was Steve Turkey Morris?
Yes.
Damn.
Yeah, and Turkey ended up winning, but the final two was a Greek person and a Turkish person.
Okay.
So it was really interesting, like after they merged, like they voted out three Turkish people in a row, and then it was Greece, Turkey, Greece, Turkey, Greece, Turkey. Final two was Greece and Turkey.
Okay. There you go.
And, yeah. So very interesting. They all spoke English to each other as soon as they merged, which made it much easier to follow. So if you guys start watching at the merge, it'll make perfect sense to you.
I have to commend you. You did a lot of research on this, Jess.
I did.
As expected, but still great job.
I need a hobby.
Not international reality TV studies?
No, I don't think there's much I can do with that except like do like one podcast a year where I talk about it.
I feel like you could teach a college course.
Yeah, look how well that worked out for Max Dawson.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so I really want to hear from you guys who are in some of these countries that we've brought up. I want to hear what actually happened, because I'm mostly going on like watching unsubtitled foreign language clips on YouTube and reading what happened on Wikipedia, which is probably summarized by someone who also watched unsubtitled foreign language clips on YouTube. So I want to know what really happened. Like, where am I right and where am I wrong on this? And also, Survivor Denmark 2009, if someone has a link to that, I really want to watch the whole thing, because I found the episode previews on YouTube and they're hilarious. I sent a couple to Rob before we started recording, and there's also something I read a lot of news articles about that happened in that season that don't even know if they aired this or not, but the part, like, you watched where the guy's just yelling at all the contestants.
Yeah, the host is yelling.
Yeah, he does a lot of yelling, but he's yelling at them to take all their clothes off.
Right.
Everybody strips naked and goes for a run, and like a couple of people refused and got kicked out of the game. And there's all this footage, like I've seen pictures of this naked run that happened. I don't know if it ever aired, but the Malaysian government got a hold of this and like kicked them out and won't let them film in Malaysia anymore.
They shut it down. Why did they make them get naked?
It was part of a challenge, I guess. They were doing a naked race.
Okay.
I don't know if it aired. I don't know what, like, I couldn't find what, if any, impact it had on the game apart from people refusing and getting kicked out, but that's just one weird thing, and we've brought up several very weird things that happened this season. And there's another part in Tribal Council, the host just picks up the urn and smashes it on the ground.
Yeah. Because I mean, there were some weird things in that trailer. It looked like also at one point the contestants are being crucified.
Yeah.
Did I catch that right?
That was actually, that's the YouTube clip that starts playing from a different season of Survivor Denmark.
Right.
But yeah, they crucified some contestants, which...
Like, literally, not figuratively crucified some contestants.
Rob, they're not nailed up there. They're tied up there.
But still.
But still. We could never do that in the U.S., and I'm kind of surprised they got away with it in Denmark.
Right, right. I mean, there are
people... It's not okay.
There are people that are literally, like, tied up on a cross.
Yeah, don't... Survivor producers around the globe, don't tie people to crosses. That's not okay. Yeah,
not okay. Not okay.
So, Denmark... I want to watch Survivor Denmark maybe from the beginning, because this just looks like maybe this is kind of the gold standard of weird twists. Like, if we're looking for things that we can use that would really like inject some pure crack into the game, this might be where we need to be looking.
Yeah. I mean, Survivor should pay you as a consultant. Just you watch all the different Survivor seasons around the world and then come up with a list and then go into Denmark Burnett's office, or actually the real Mark Burnett's office, and like, okay, here's what's working, here's what's not working. Thank you, I'm out. And they could sort of sit like Chinese menu and like, okay, let's try one of these.
Yeah.
I'll have
from column A.
I'll have the
number 43 yeah. and number 22, some scallion pancakes.
I'll get a side of the Joker. The Kentucky Joker.
I'll take a side order of the Mole Gong.
Yeah. Sure, why not?
Yeah, well, you know,
no, cancel that Mole Gong.
Yeah, no Mole Gong. Hold the Mole Gong.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, you know that they listen to your show already, so they don't even need to pay me. I just gave it to them for free.
For free. Okay.
Consider it a gift, like a gift that comes from a very loving place.
So, Jess, what else? What else is not working?
I think that pretty much goes
pretty much
to the end of my list of what's not working, although there are so many more seasons I could plumb to find... I think I found the weirdest, though.
I think that you will probably also now, from out of the woodwork, people will come to you now and like, oh, well, in our country, they got Rupert as an immunity challenge.
Oh, I saw that one.
Yeah. That was Survivor Israel, where they won Rupert as a reward, and he came in and actually sort of like fell on his face.
Yeah, and everybody was really upset about that. They're like, this is the worst reward we've ever gotten.
Like, it was like a bill of goods, like, you'll get Rupert. He knows everything. And he is like, roar. And then he like couldn't catch any fish and he didn't do anything of note.
Yeah. People were complaining. Yeah. So maybe we'll put that one over there with the Mole Gong. You don't need to give people Rupert as immunity reward. But
maybe
yeah,
Rupert was the mole.
Maybe he was the mole. Like, somebody get out the Mole Gong. I've guessed who the mole is. So yeah, I welcome it. If people want to come to me and tell me what is the weirdest thing that's happened on your country's version of Survivor, I want to hear all about it. Because if you have something that makes Expedition Robinson Denmark 2009 look tame, I want to know about it. I'm sure it exists.
Okay.
Please tell me.
All right. Well, let Jess know on Twitter. She's at Haymaker Hattie. That's H-A-T-T-I-E. Haymaker Hattie. Is that the best way for people to contact you with these things?
Yeah, and you can also, like, if you need more than 140 characters, because you probably do if it's that weird, like, just go into the comments on robhaswebsite.com and leave a comment there.
Sure, that's great. Leave the comments, robhaswebsite.com. Also, Jess, we got a lot of stuff going on this week. I mentioned earlier the Survivor Philippines chapter of Evolution of Strategy is dropping. I'm very excited for you guys to hear that one. You could see that more on that at evolutionstrategy.com, where the Borneo chapter is completely for free. It's about 6 hours long. You can get that at evolutionofstrategy.com, and the Philippines chapter drops this Friday. Also, our friend Jason Somerville, I talked about poker earlier in the show, he's doing his Run It Up Reno event, where he is going to be having a big poker tournament. And then also he's going to be watching Survivor, and he's going to try to get some Survivor players up there also to be playing poker and watching the show live with him on the night of Wednesday the 21st. So you can see more about that at runitupreno.com. All right, Jess. Amazing Race Canada wrap-ups. Well, when do those come up on Rob as a Podcast?
Those typically drop like Sunday night or Monday, and that's around the time the blog comes out, because Dan and I usually need a couple of days to track down the episode and take our notes. And also, you know, we're both, you know, homebodies who'd never leave the house, so we record over the weekend.
You were just in Iceland.
I know, but I'm back now. And what do I have to look forward to? More Amazing Race Canada, that's all.
Okay, you can follow that show on Reality TV Wrap-Ups, which you can find on robiswebsite.com, or go to robiswebsite.com/ wrap ups. Jess, the hashtag for this episode. Let's go. Yeah. Let's do it. Denmark Burnett.
Denmark Burnett.
All right. Very much looking forward to getting back started with Survivor is going to be around the corner. I think we're starting to be within like the single digit days of the official cast release. I don't know what we would call it for. We know who the people are going to be on the show, but officially like the green light where it's like the start of the race where CBS is going to drop the handkerchief and then it's a race to the lead up to Survivor 31.
Well, I hear they're already airing commercials for it, so
yeah,
there's that.
I think they're pumped up. So pretty soon we're going to officially leave the Survivor offseason and begin to talk about the Survivor preseason for Survivor Cambodia. Very excited for that.
Super excited. I can't wait.
And then, of course, Jess and I are going to be talking about The Amazing Race again this fall, which is going to premiere the Friday after Survivor Cambodia.
Very exciting week.
Real quick, Jess, before I let you go, and just getting into a little bit of Big Brother spoilers here from this past week's episode, if you haven't seen it. So, Jess, I just want to get your take on Jeff and Jackie. So, what did you think of those two guys? Did you take anything away from the little bit that you saw?
I guess not. I tried really hard, Rob. The little bit that I saw, they seemed like they were doing okay, but It ruined any of us that were watching Amazing Race and were like Jeff and Jackie shippers.
Yeah.
Because there was no spark there. It was very disappointing.
No sparks. I don't think the fans really loved Jeff. Jackie was really under the radar. People were calling her a floater, but then she sort of came into her own the last couple of weeks, and then she got evicted as part of the double eviction this past week. But I think that Jackie ended up being more of a fan favorite than she was on the Amazing Race.
I guess that's good. Good for Jackie.
Good for Jackie. So
she seems like a nice girl.
She did something, and she's actually still in the mix because they're going to bring back one of the people from jury back into the game. So maybe she's on Redemption Island with a dog right now.
Maybe.
So we'll see what happens with Jackie if she comes back into the game.
All right.
Okay. Jess, great job with this. I really appreciate all the hard work you put into this. And
I'm happy to do it.
Great job. Can't wait to get back started talking about Amazing Race in the fall. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. Looking forward to reading about all the wacky international Survivor twists that we don't know about on robiswebsite.com. Have a good one, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.